Before we call the second case for this morning, I want to welcome Lincoln High School students from Wisconsin Rapids who are with us this morning as part of the national award-winning program Court with Class. Would the Lincoln High School students please stand? Good morning and thank you. You may be seated. We had another group with us at 9:45, and we have a third group of Lincoln High School students with us at 1:45 at our third oral argument. And now that we've met you, I would like to introduce the court to all in the courtroom. Starting on my far right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To her left is Justice John Wilcox. To my immediate right is Justice Donald Steinmetz. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate left is Justice William Babbage. To his left is Justice Jeanine Geske. And to Justice Geske's left is Justice Patrick Crooks. Justice Crooks will meet with the Lincoln High School students at noon to discuss the procedures of the court. Anyone else who wishes to join that noon session is welcome. We will now proceed to our second case today, 96-1235, the State versus Kenosha County Board of Adjustment. Representing the state of Wisconsin is Lorraine Stolfus, Assistant Attorney General.
Good morning. May I please the court, my name is Lorraine Stolzfus, and I am an Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Wisconsin. With one decision, the Court of Appeals has rolled back 30 years of protection of Wisconsin's lakes and rivers. That protection is in the form of shoreland zoning, which creates a 75-foot buffer zone between the ordinary high water mark of the lake and structures placed on that lake's shoreland. The Court of Appeals decision threatens the very existence of this crucial 75-foot buffer by setting a new and very expansive standard for granting variances in lakeside settings, a standard that says essentially if you want a variance, it's yours for the asking. The state, along with the Wisconsin Association of Lakes, representing thousands of lakeshore property owners throughout Wisconsin, asks this court to move the clock 30 years forward again by reversing the Court of Appeals decision. We ask this court to hold that in a situation in which the landowner has a reasonable use of the property without a variance from shoreland zoning, then the test for unnecessary hardship has not been met and a variance will not be granted.
Is that what the, counsel, is that what the court really said? As I see this case, this went through four hearings, basically, four processes. It went through the Board of Adjustment twice, and I'm somewhat familiar with the Board of Adjustments and their findings, and these were, I think, extremely sensitive findings and minute and explained, and then it went through the Circuit Court, which upheld that, and went through the Court of Appeals. So when you say that this is going to set back shoreland zoning for the next, what's happened over the last 30 years, I just have a difficulty because I think in this case, as I see the facts, and maybe that's my question, what is so devastating about this where the board did consider and reconsider and then finally come to the fact that this woman owned six lots, this was 64 feet away within the 75-foot shoreline. What's so devastating about that? Is it the nature, how they did it?
No, the state's not disputing that the board was careful, tried to do a careful job, looked at all of the facts, made findings to the best of its ability, proceeded in good faith. We're not disputing that. The problem that the state has with the board's decision and then also specifically with the Court of Appeals decision is that the case has much broader implications than simply this particular deck on this particular...
We understand that. Yeah.
Right. The problem with the board's decision and the way the Court of Appeals affirmed it is that the board never failed to, the board failed to ever properly grapple with the question of, is this person's desire to have a deck really a case of unnecessary hardship? The board went through a lot of findings of fact that had to do, and I'm sure the court is familiar from having looked at this, had to do with a lot of different things. But the state believes that they failed to grapple with the underlying essential question, which is the lack or the failure to be able to have a deck on a lake an unnecessary hardship.
Well, counsel, let me just interrupt for a moment. I think 6 out of the 7 justices here own property that borders on water, which I assume is navigable. Anyway, there are a lot of boats out there. And I myself live out at Lake Monona, which in that area, which was originally summer cottages and now, and out of town, you couldn't get there except by boat. And now it's right in the heart of Madison. And people have been improving their properties for as long as I've lived there, which is roughly 30 plus years. I'm sure they've gotten variances. I'm sure neighbors on both sides have gotten variances. I can't remember for what, but this is very ordinary in the lake property development. So what's so extraordinary about this? And what's so extraordinary about a deck? I bet decks are one of the more ordinary variances.
Right? Yes, they are.
And they're usually not very permanent kinds of constructions.
They're usually
not so permanent. Having had a deck fall recently at our house. Which we rebuilt and was not a variance, just to make full disclosure. But what's so unusual about this? This must be an everyday occurrence in Wisconsin.
Okay, a couple responses to that, Your Honor. First of all, I think it's important to notice that the county ordinance and this requirement of a 75-foot setback is something that applies to unincorporated areas of counties. Madison, for example, Monona, the cities that are in this area, to my knowledge, don't have a 75-foot setback. That was exempted, presumably, in the legislature's wisdom, precisely for the kinds of reasons that you're talking about, that they were already developed and it just wouldn't have made sense. So this applies to unincorporated areas, not to cities and incorporated areas. Secondly, the state does view decks as a permanent structure. I think they're supposed to be permanent. In any event, the deck, a porch, any of those kinds of things are considered, and I believe in definitions of structures, if they're permanently affixed kind of thing, then they are considered a structure and they do fall under the setback. But beyond that, the reason that this is important in Wisconsin is because the whole purpose of this ordinance has very much to do with environmental protection and with protection of waters by creating that 75-foot buffer zone. The purpose of the ordinance is not to create a certain flavor of a neighborhood, a character of a neighborhood like so many zoning variances are, but it's very specifically an environmental protection purpose. And if the court were to hold that, or if the Court of Appeals decision were to stand, essentially the Court of Appeals is saying in a lakeside setting, we're going to have an even less restrictive standard because we think people should be able to have decks and whatever is kind of in vogue on their lakeside setting.
What wasn't this, just the facts, this was a very steep embankment. In other words, as I recall the facts, it was 33 steps down. Wasn't that a unique situation? This is not a standard setting for giving a deck, is it?
Well, the state's not disputing that there's a slope there. There's very obviously a slope, and there were 33 steps down. The thing is that if you look at the facts carefully, the DAC doesn't even deal with the fact that there's a slope on the property and the fact that the board granted a DAC, I think, are not nearly as related as the board said that they were. And the reason I think this is because there's going to be a slope and there are going to be steps going down to the lake, whether there's a DAC or not. The fact is that the property owner in the hearing even referred to a flat area outside her house and that the deck goes to the end of the flat area and then starts down. So I think that the whole slope issue got intertwined in this in a way that just because the property has a slope, it's a big leap to say that therefore a deck is needed in order for, well, as the county says, for safety. The slope is there, and it may be unique, but just because the slope is there doesn't mean that the property owner has an unnecessary hardship in not being able to have a deck. Let me also say that...
Well, and I'd like to get you back to the chief's question. Unless, are you done answering about
sure,
the slope?
Sure, I was going to go on.
Why can't the Court of Appeals opinion be read very narrowly? This is an 11-foot intrusion into the 75-foot footback requirement. They put a very, Kenosha put a lot of restrictions on it. It had to be, water had to flow through it, there had to be pea gravel, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they were not authorizing the Taj Mahal in front of this this cabin. It was an existing structure. And decks have become pretty much of a common thing. In other words, why couldn't we just simply say to the extent that it applies to the facts of this case, okay. But you're saying that this has huge ramifications. My inclination is to agree with you, but you haven't given me an answer as to why it has huge ramifications.
Okay. I think one of the problems with the Court of Appeals decision is that it never addressed the issue of unnecessary hardship in light of the purpose of the variance. And if I may, I'd like to back up a little bit to explain that. In the Snyder case, the court stated that what relates to unnecessary hardship must be will be viewed in light of the purposes of the zoning ordinance. So if you have a zoning ordinance that deals with the kinds of setbacks or size of houses or whatever that are meant to preserve the flavor of a neighborhood, perhaps what's a reasonable use would be a slightly different thing than what's going to be reasonable in the 75-foot buffer zone, which is specifically meant to be set aside for environmental protection.
Counsel, you shifted from unnecessary hardship to reasonable use. Now, it seems to me the key issue in this case is, what does unnecessary hardship mean? That's a statutory term. It's also used in the ordinance. And in order to be able to get consistent decisions across the state by boards of adjustment and by trial courts and appellate courts, we have to take a stab at what we mean by unnecessary hardship. Now, when I read your brief, I read it to mean no feasible use of the property without the variance. Is that what you really intend?
No, that's not what I meant to say. And I did, a few times in the brief, interchangeably use no feasible use. I did interchangeably use a few times in the brief no feasible use and reasonable use.
Right. Okay.
Let me clarify, and I'm glad you asked that question. The state is specifically asking this court hold that in an area variance situation, if the person has a reasonable use without the variance, that does not constitute unnecessary hardship. We're not asking for a strict, no feasible use standard to be applied in area variances.
Okay, so in area variance, and this is an area variance. Right.
It's certainly a setback variance. I think it may have some use implications because of the environmental protection, but that's not something that I really...
So it's an area use?
Yes.
Okay.
But doesn't your test then get us into a debate as to whether a deck is a reasonable use or not?
I can see all kinds of variations on that theme as boards of adjustment around the state, up in Vilas County, in Ida County, where they have thousands of lakes, is what you're arguing for, as I see it, tries to determine what's reasonable use.
Well, that's precisely one of the reasons why we petitioned for this case. The state is not asking for the court to find that a landowner should be able to have any reasonable use whatsoever and should be given variances for that. We're specifically asking for the court to find that if a landowner can have a reasonable use, and in the context of this case, the state believes that a reasonable use means residential use, and specifically for a situation like this where there's been a house there for 60 years, it's been used residentially, there is already a reasonable use, therefore a variance shouldn't be granted. We're not disputing that a deck is a reasonable use. A three-car garage might be a reasonable use. A six-bedroom house might be a reasonable use. But if a modest residential use can be obtained without intruding into the 75-foot setback, then the state believes that a variance shouldn't be granted, that variances should only be granted for the very minimal kind of relief that might be necessary.
So if there was a house but it didn't have a bathroom and it had to intrude in the 75-foot, then you might say, well, it's not reasonable use to have a cabin without running water or bathroom facilities, so
I think
will allow an intrusion.
That would probably be a situation where we wouldn't object to that, yes.
But if you want to enlarge the kitchen because it would make it more reusable and will allow you to have parties, and this is a party house, you'd say you have a reasonable use without enlarging the kitchen into the 75 feet.
I think it's not just what the state says. I believe that this court got into those kinds of issues of personal convenience, personal inconvenience in the Snyder case, where the landowner wanted to get a variance because their family was growing, they wanted more space, they wanted to be able to kind of get out and enjoy being on the lake. And I believe the court was clear in that case that those kinds of factors, as difficult as it may be for an individual landowner, are not the kinds of factors that constitute unnecessary hardship.
Does it make sense to have different standards as you're discussing for the use variances as opposed to an area variance? Does it make sense to have these different standards?
Well, I'm not 100% sure what the standard is for use variance. I believe that...
Isn't it a residential or a commercial? Or this is, we're talking use when we're talking about area. We're talking about something like a setback, or
right.
We're talking about here, we're talking about size.
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, what was your question?
The question is, we've got different standards. You're talking about an area variance, you're talking about a use variance. Does it make sense to have these different standards?
I think that the answer to that lies in that the standard has to be looked at in light of the purpose of the zoning ordinance. I believe the Court of Appeals was correct that the reason for a very stringent standard in use variance situations is that a use variance can dramatically change the character of a neighborhood. However, I don't think the Court of Appeals went far enough in that, because they stopped with character of the neighborhood as a kind of factor to be looked at in determining whether a variance should be granted. And I think in a situation like this, you've got an ordinance, a zoning protection that has very specific purposes of protection of water quality, water pollution. The buffer zone is to be used. It helps to reduce runoff, all those kinds of things, that it does make sense to have a standard that looks at reasonable use and doesn't use character of the neighborhood as one of the factors that should be considered.
What is the standard that you believe the Court of Appeals set, and how does it differ from the one that you are espousing today?
I believe that what the Court of Appeals did was basically said, if a property owner wants something that can be considered a reasonable use, even if they already have a different level or a different kind of reasonable use, then a variance should be granted even if it intrudes into the setback. And because in this situation, there was a viable residential use. The picture shows that there's a reasonably sized house there, big windows, porch, all that sort of thing. There is a reasonable residential use on that property. And I believe the Court of Appeals is opening the door for landowners to say they want a deck, they want a three, you know, any of those kinds of things could be considered reasonable. And however, if there can be a reasonable residential use without a variance, the state doesn't believe that variance should be granted. So I think the Court of Appeals just doesn't deal with the fact that there already is a reasonable use there, and the kinds of reasons that I believe they affirmed the variance for were reasons of personal inconvenience.
Okay, I'd like to get back to my question, and I think the Chief's question, and let me see if I can make it clear. I understand your legal arguments. I understand that you're saying the law is this, and they misinterpreted the law, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I want to know why. Pretend I'm not a lawyer. Tell me what's wrong with the Court of Appeals decision. What's the parade of horribles that's going to happen if the Court of Appeals decision is the law of the land?
If a variance can be granted for structures that a landowner believes they need in order to have full enjoyment of their property or reasonable enjoyment of their property, as in this situation where the landowner said they wanted a deck for pleasure, you know, all of which are reasonable reasons, but if that door is opened, it seems to me that any kind of residential, recreational kind of use could be tied to, I live on a lake, I need a three-car garage because I've got all this extra recreational equipment, or I live on the lake, I need a six-bedroom house because people visit me all the time and I need the room to have more recreation. There's not a logical kind of stopping point, unless this court were to adopt some kind of a test that says a reasonable use is that you can put a reasonably sized residence on a lot without getting a variance. And I guess the parade of horribles is not so much this particular deck as it is that state believes it leaves local boards of adjustment without clear guidance as to.
Counsel, tell me what you think the Court of Appeals test is for an area variance.
The thing that's troubling to the state is I believe the Court of Appeals made a test for an area variance specifically in lakeside settings. It's more expansive than.
What is it? I read it to say, and I can pick out several, but as to an area variance, they're referring to Snyder, and they say, whether compliance with the strict letter of the restrictions would unreasonably prevent the owner from using the property for a permitted purpose or would render conformity with such restrictions unnecessarily burdensome. Mm-hmm. Is that the test?
I believe, yes.
Look at the exact language. It's in your brief at pages 4, 5, 6, 7. Because, you know, I visualize myself or someone else on this court drawing this case, and we have to write an opinion. And then I got to say what unnecessary hardship means. So what do I say it means? What you say it means. If there's a reasonable use without the variance, then you don't give a variance. That's the test the state's
right.
So tell me what the test is here that's so troublesome to you.
Well, what's troublesome is that if the language is simply left at unnecessarily burdensome or being prohibited from using it for a permitted purpose,
right,
that doesn't give clear guidance to boards of adjustment. What does unnecessarily burdensome mean? And the reason the state is advocating the test of if you have a reasonable use in a residential area being a reasonable residential use, a variance shouldn't be granted, is that we believe that defines or gives guidance as to what unnecessarily burdensome means. That the two words kind of standing by themselves don't have a whole lot of meaning, but you have to look at the facts of a case like Snyder to help to define what unnecessarily burdensome means. And
I'll tell you what bothered me. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
No, I was thinking, isn't this the way the Board of Adjustment always operates? It would look, and this is the way it should be, it's common sense. You would look at the facts of each individual case, and in this case, the uniqueness, here is a person that owned six lots. This was not a lot right up against other lots. There were other decks on this lake, as I understand it, that were within the 75-foot setback, according to the facts that I read, and that they looked at the structure on there, the number of years, all of these things, and that's the way I would think that a Board of Adjustment would be expected to look at the question of unnecessary hardship and then eventually come to a decision. So that's what I'm struggling with, is what you would like this court, as Chief Justice asked, what you would like us to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that, to follow up on your question, that we would like you to say is that the presence or absence of other structures on the lake that are within the setback should not go to whether or not unnecessary hardship can be found. And the reason we believe that is all kinds of reasons why other structures could be on a lake, and I won't go into great detail because I did that in my brief, but the whole purpose of zoning is to, if you have non-conforming uses, for example, is to ultimately phase those out. But the presence or absence of other decks goes to this kind of character of the neighborhood, which is not the purpose of the shoreline zoning ordinance, and the state believes should not be considered in the context of shoreline zoning ordinance variances.
Thank you, Council. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Representing the Mercer County Board of Adjustment, Ms. Bursinger, Assistant Corporation Counsel.
May it please the Court. My name is Deborah Bursinger, and I represent the Kenosha County Board of Adjustments. I would like to begin by pointing out what it is that the Board would like this court to hold, and what it is that the Board does not advocate for this court to hold. First of all, the Board would like for this court to clarify its holding in Snyder with regard to the definition of unnecessary hardship as it relates to area variances. Contrary to what the petitioner has asserted in their briefs, the Board does not advocate a standard whereby variances would be granted on a minimal showing of difficulty. We believe the Snyder case was clear in declining to adopt that type of standard. And we do not advocate that the court adopt a new standard for the granting of area variances. It's our opinion that Snyder plainly and unambiguously adopted a standard for area variances, or a definition of unnecessary hardship for area variances, which looks at whether or not a person is unreasonably prevented from using a property for a permitted purpose or is unnecessarily burdened. A decision by this court upholding the Court of Appeals, Judge Fisher, and the Circuit Court and the Board of Adjustments will not result in the new standard for granting variances and will not, in our opinion, result in variances being handed out like candy, as asserted by the petitioner. Applicants will still be required to meet a high standard of unnecessary hardship. They still will have to show that hardships are not self-created, and that hardships are, or that the variance will not be contrary to the public interest.
Well, let's just accept your suggestion for the moment. I have a little difficulties finding why being without a deck unreasonably prevents the owner from using the property as a residence, and why conformity with the 75 feet in this case is unnecessarily burdensome.
Well, this case contains a factor which I think is unique, and that is the steep slope that was spoken of earlier. If the variance were not approved in this case, The evidence before the board was that the petitioner would suffer a hardship related to the dangerous condition of the slope. And
could that be fixed with a 3-foot deck?
Well, in this particular case, the house is set back 78 feet from...
So that's why I picked 3 feet.
Right. Well, a standard door is 3 feet wide, and under the current building code restrictions, Mrs. Huntoon would not have been able to rebuild the concrete stoop which had been there before because it didn't contain a railing. In order for her to build this new stoop with a railing, and in order for her to be able to open the door to get out, it would have to be greater than 3 feet in width.
Okay,
so she would, at least 4 feet would be our opinion. So she would have had to obtain some type of variance. Now, if the petitioner is correct, she should not even have received, should not even receive a 1 foot variance. And in that case, that would destroy her ability to exit the home safely.
Well, isn't there another entrance to the home?
Correct, but I do believe that building code restrictions would require at least, for fire safety purposes, at least 2 safe exits.
How long has the lady been on the property?
She herself has been there only, I believe, about 2 years now.
But the family's been there long.
Correct. She inherited it through her family.
And why can't you just change the door to open into the room instead of out of the room?
Well, I guess I had not thought of that. I believe the board's contention that requiring her to change the architecture of her home in order to safely exit the home would have been unnecessarily burdensome, and that allowing a minimal variance for a deck was a more reasonable, logical...
14 feet? Was how wide that deck was? The deck was 14 feet?
Correct. It was 14 feet.
Counsel, I want to look at undue hardship. In the May 4th, 1995 minutes of the Kenosha Board of Adjustment hearing, they found undue hardship. Of course, you have to find, in order to have a variance, that there be unnecessary hardship that's not self-created. It has to be a hardship unique to the property and not contrary to public interest. Unnecessary hardship. The first paragraph they had as an unnecessary hardship, I'm looking at the page 121 of the state's brief, the appendix. The first paragraph, the unnecessary hardship, they went into the history of the house, that it was built in 1930, that there were 15 feet of shoreline has been lost since then. And she has further stated that there are other structures directly in her view across the lake with less setback from the lake. The second paragraph of their finding of a necessary hardship is also that it would be unnecessarily burdensome because other lakefront property owners enjoy a closer setback than 64 feet in question. And the third and final paragraph as to why it would be unnecessarily burdensome or create an unnecessary hardship is that there might be a loss of value. Is that how you think this court should define unnecessary hardship compared to what others have and loss of value, which apparently, and the 15-foot erosion, which I see as the three factors that the board used?
Well, I think this court should define unnecessary hardship as whether or not a person is unreasonably prevented from using their property for permitted use, or whether the hardship they suffer would be unnecessarily burdensome. And I think that there are a lot of factors that a board might consider in coming to that type of a...
Well, we've got 3 here. Loss of value. Is that a factor of the unreasonably burdensome test that is appropriate for a board to consider in its variance determination?
There have been previous statements by this court and the Court of Appeals with regard to economic loss of value and hardship determinations. In Ozaukee County Board of Adjustments and in the, I believe it was the Winnebago case. In both of those cases, the court held that standing alone economic loss is not a valid consideration in the granting of variances.
Well, what about if you add the loss of value with the other unnecessary hardship element the board found? That is that she has stated that there are other structures directly in her view across the lake with less setback from the lake. Is that a valid consideration the court, rather the board, should have in determining if there is unnecessary hardship? What others across the lake have?
Well, I think that what others in the area have shows whether or not the use of a property might be reasonable, and I think it can, in that context, be considered a consideration in the granting of variances.
If I can just interrupt for a minute, does that mean that everybody on that lake then would be entitled to a variance for a deck?
No, I don't believe they would, because I think they still have to meet the other standards of hardship, which would be that the hardship was not self-created, that there's a unique property condition.
But if the hardship is loss of value and that everybody else has, the other people on the other side of the lake don't have that kind of setback, I mean, if those are the factors, then everybody has those factors who doesn't have a deck.
But not everybody has a unique property condition that is not that is unique to their property, like in this case, the steep slope, which is a hardship in this case because of the fact that she needs to exit her home from that side of the property and that she needs to get to the lake, have access through that.
But the one-foot setback that the Chief Justice referred to would have cured that problem, or could have cured that problem, would it not?
Yes, I think that would have cured that problem. I think the board in this case just felt that, given all of the considerations, as you've noted they are, that she was not requesting a major variance, and they simply felt that this was a reasonable use of her property.
Ms. Bursinger, what evidence is there on the record, since this is a certiorari action, what evidence is there on the record in regard to the uniqueness of this particular property? You've talked about the fact that it's got a steep slope. Do we know about the adjoining properties? Do we know about other properties on the lake in regard to the steepness going to the water?
Well, the photograph, which is part of the record, does give some indication of the fact that Mrs. Hectoon's home sits on the highest point of the steep slope, and that the slope somewhat decreases after that, to the point where her neighbors have virtually no slope. And there's also the indication in the record where she talks about the deck across the lake, which she says is on a flat area that's level, essentially, with the lake. And I think that's another point that indicates in the record the fact that she's on a steep slope. I would note that the Board of Adjustments in this case did go out and view the property. And remembering that members of the Board of Adjustment are not attorneys and do not always, I guess, clarify in the record the necessary standards, they did not make a good record on that particular point. But I think the photograph is evidence, and their personal observations were part of this also, and it is something they observed, that the slope is particularly unique to her property.
Well, was there also a claim in regard to erosion? Was that another claim in regard to uniqueness, that there was an erosion problem here as well?
Yes, Mrs. Huntoon indicated that she estimated she lost approximately 15 feet of shoreland over the years to erosion. In her opinion, it seemed to affect her property more severely than neighbors, because she had noted how particular structures on the lake, such as piers and boathouses, had been affected by the erosion. And while her shoreline seemed to have been swallowed up by the lake, others still had piers and boathouses that had been there for some time. that have not been as severely affected.
Is there any evidence in the record that the deck across the lake had grandfathered in, or was that built as a matter of variance also?
That I'm not really sure. I don't know which deck she's referring to, and there's no other evidence in the record.
Let me express my concern and have you address it. If I were to have waterfront property, I would like to have a deck. And so I certainly understand the homeowner's position here. On the other hand, this is property that's been there since 1930 without a deck, apparently. And there are lots and lots of lakefront properties around the state that have steep hills and inclines down to the lake. People buy properties like that all the time. And my concern is, if the argument is simply that there's more value if you have a deck on, I think, you know, that certainly meets common sense, that there are other properties perhaps that were grandfathered in that may have decks that go within the 75-foot limitation, and that it becomes difficult to use your property the way you would be able to use if you had a deck. If that's enough for a variance, then it sort of takes the heart out of the purpose of that setback, which is the environmental protection of the lakes of the state. And so I guess I'd like you to address that, because the reason for that setback requirement is that there is a determination that to try to preserve the high quality of our lakes, we need to have that. And if this takes the guts out of that requirement, then we defeat that whole purpose. So I'd like you to address my concern about that.
Sure. In addition to unnecessary hardship and that being self-created and there being unique property conditions, in order for a variance to be granted, you also have to demonstrate that it will not be contrary to the public interest. And that is important in this case, because what we're looking at is whether the hardship is one which is unnecessary given the purposes of the zoning law to protect health, safety, and welfare of the public. And in this case, that would be our shoreline. In this case, the board had before it evidence from the DNR that this deck would not impact the public interest because it would not impact Hooker Lake. Therefore, her hardships rise to the level of being unnecessary because they are not contrary to the public interest. Many zoning...
Would the next one be contrary to the public interest if it was under the exact same circumstances?
Well, if there were evidence before the board from, for instance, the DNR indicating that this will have a severe impact on the lake and indicating in what way...
Right next door. Let's say it's right next door to the exact same kind of property, which is not unusual in the state. Would you have to grant that ordinance variation as well, variance?
If it had the same unique property conditions, if it had, if it were not contrary to the public interest, and there was evidence in the record as to that, and if it were not self-created, I think that in most cases that should be granted then.
Then under that kind of logic, if all of the property around the lake is of that nature, then you're essentially creating a 64-foot setback rule, aren't you? Contrary to the law, which says it's got to be 75 feet.
That could be, but I think what we have to remember is that the Board of Adjustments has to look at each individual variance request as an individual request and consider the facts and circumstances of each. Also, just because there's a violation of the setback does not mean that the board can deny the variance. There have to be other reasons. The whole purpose of for variance law is to relax the standard. To simply deny it because that is the standard or that is the law is not permissible.
Define unnecessary hardship for this variance?
I would define it as the Court of Appeals defined it and as this court defined it in the Snyder case for area variances. And that is
the language I read.
Yes. And I think the Snyder Court adopted a different definition of unnecessary hardship when it applies to use variances, which is that there's no feasible use of the property. I think the Snyder Court...
Well, let me... You know, the Chief Justice read some language. The court citing Snyder rejected would render conformity with such strictures unnecessarily burdensome. I note, at least at page 9, our Court of Appeals goes on to say that it carries no significant alteration in the use of her property or in the character of the neighborhood. Is that part of the Court of Appeals definition as to what constitutes unnecessary hardship if the variance request carries no significant alteration in the use of her property or in the character of the neighborhood?
I don't think that's a consideration for the granting of variances, because I think character of the neighborhood has already been determined legislatively by the governing body as to what uses are permitted or not permitted in a particular zoning district. I think that character of the neighborhood and whether or not there's a significant change is a relevant consideration when you're trying to determine whether something is a use variance or an area variance. Area variances, by definition, do not have major effect on the character of the neighborhood, while use variances, by definition, do have a significant impact on the character of the neighborhood. So I guess I would not ask that this court hold that that's a consideration of granting a variance, but I do think it is relevant in determining what standard is to be used in analyzing the variance request.
Now, my concern is the Court of Appeals on page 9 uses that language right before, though we therefore conclude that the board properly considered Huntoon's area variance under the unnecessarily burdensome test. It's the paragraph right before the conclusion, the summary. Arguably, it's the summary paragraph. Or a summary paragraph. And arguably, the court used that as a test, that the area variance request carries no significant alteration in the use of the property or in the character of the neighborhood. To the contrary, the evidence before the board, etc. I won't read it to you, but I think the last line may be helpful to you. We conclude that this condition, that is the character of the property, is relevant on the question of which test applies. That's
yes.
What use and area test, is that what they're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I don't think they're actually saying that you should consider that as part of the variance request, but that it's relevant on which test you're going to use in considering the variance. As I said, I think that whether or not something is compatible with the character of the neighborhood is properly a decision made by the legislative body in enacting the ordinance, and is not a decision to be made by the Board of Adjustments. And I don't think they did that in this case. I think that while they may not have couched it in the terms that lawyers would like, that the board looked at the neighborhood and whether or not other decks were present, but I think they were looking at it as whether a deck in the shore yard would be a reasonable use of the property in the context of the unnecessarily burdensome.
I had trouble with that language in the Court of Appeals decision, because it seemed to me to be saying that on a lake with, let's say, 50 homes on it, if 25 of them are not in conformity, then you just throw up your hands and allow the other 25 to not be in conformity as well. Now, am I misreading that? Do you understand what I'm saying there?
Well, I think that consideration of the other decks in the neighborhood being within the setback is just one consideration that they looked at. And I think that standing alone, I doubt that that would be a sufficient reason for one to be granted a variance. I think that in this case there were many, many reasons why they decided to grant the variance, that being one of them. And in this case, that factor, along with all the other factors in the board's opinion, rose to the level of being unnecessary hardships because they were unnecessarily burdensome.
Do you think that the state would be here, I'm going to ask them the question, if it was a four-foot variance? In other words, as you explained, 3 foot was not enough, but they just were able to get out the door. Or do you believe that the 75-foot shoreline setback is that's it, that there would be no incursion or going into that setback? Are we talking about feet here, or are we just talking about that 75 feet is an absolute for the state?
Well, the state in their briefs have indicated that because Mrs. Huntoon is able to continue to use her residence and has used that residence, that she should not be granted a variance. I interpret that to mean she should not be granted a 1 foot variance or an 11 foot variance. She cannot, according to the state, demonstrate an unnecessary hardship if she has the use of her home.
I'm not a contractor, but I do know building my house that where there was supposed to be a door, I had to put sliding doors, which take absolutely no out on the deck, so that then you'd have your 4 foot deck.
I guess, similar to the Chief Justice's question before, I'm not sure that the board actually considered that, but I do think that maybe they considered that having to change the architecture of her home was not the most logical way to go in this case.
One of the things that concerns me is the use of a ceremony, being able to use the deck, as opposed to residential use. You seem to focus on whether or not the use of a deck is a permitted use, or that she should be able to use her deck. And aren't we really talking about a much, much larger concept than whether someone can use a deck or someone can use a fourth bedroom that they desire to add on, or someone desires, as the chief earlier, to add on to their kitchen? She still has a residential house without a deck.
Right. And I think that's a valid argument if this court accepts the state's assertion that under Snyder, if one has a feasible use of their property, they should not be granted a variance. If, as we contend, Snyder states, for the granting of an area variance, you only need to prove whether or not you're unreasonably prevented from using your property for a permitted purpose, what we're looking at is the fact that in a residential zoning district, decks are specifically permitted. Now, they're not permitted within the setback. Similarly, this has a shoreland overlay. Shoreland districts also allow decks, but they are simply not permitted within the setback. So this is a permitted use on this property. If it were not for the 75-foot setback that came so close to her home. So the fact that she can still use the property for a residential purpose is not the determinative question if the standard is whether or not this is unnecessarily burdensome. And when we look at the purpose of the zoning law, which is to protect the public health and welfare and safety, and we look at the evidence which shows that there would not be any such effect, adverse effect in this case, her burden of not being able to use that property for a permitted purpose rises to the level of being unnecessary.
If I wanted to extend my house to have a 5-bedroom house and then decks outside of those bedrooms so that it brought property to 30 feet within the high water mark, is there any problem with that?
Well, the homeowner might consider it a hardship not to be able to do that, but whether or not it's unnecessary is a question.
Permitted use. Bedrooms are permitted uses under your argument.
And if, I guess, the evidence showed that there wouldn't be any contrary public interest, or the public interest wouldn't be harmed, which is the reason for having this setback requirement, then that hardship would become unnecessary. Many, like I said, zoning setbacks are there for a purpose, and that's to protect the public's health, safety, and welfare. But
how is adding two bedrooms and two more kids going to adversely affect the public's interest?
Well, I think it depends on, if we're talking about a side yard setback, the neighbors would most probably think they're adversely affected because now this house is much closer to them than what was required under law and what they expected. In this case, there's no persons harmed by Mrs. Huntoon having a deck. She has no close neighbors, and the DNR evidence stated that that Hooker Lake would not be affected. So one still has to prove that nobody will be adversely affected by the variance and that the public interest will not be affected, the very purpose for which the zoning restriction is there in the first place. I guess I would just like to close by again reiterating that I don't, the Board of Adjustments is not, again, asking this court to adopt any new standard. I think the standard was set forth sufficiently and plainly in Snyder as to what the definition of unnecessary hardship should be for an area variance versus a use variance. And I think that the Court of Appeals, Judge Fisher, and the Circuit Court and the Board of thought very carefully about all of the considerations, all of the hardships, and made a proper decision in this case.
Thank you, Ms. Bersinger. Mr. Stolfus, Ms. Stolfus, you have a few moments for rebuttal.
Counsel, do you agree with opposing counsel's assessment that the state would be here even if, after we understand that it would be a one-foot incursion? In other words, we'd have a three-foot, four-foot deck, 1 foot of that would go into...
No, the state would not be here if the board had granted, I believe, a one-foot variance strictly for purposes of safety. The state feels that the board took safety to kind of an absurd degree. Just by way of comparison, the murals in this courtroom are 9 feet by 18 and a half feet, and the deck that was approved by the board is another 4.5 feet in both directions in that. So I think the board just took that to a